Next case set for argument is appeal number 30770 in the matter of the expungement of the record concerning Jarrett Jones. Appellant Paul Sweetland is arguing on behalf of the state of South Dakota. David Geyer is arguing on behalf of appellee Mr. Jones. I would note that Judge Jeffrey Clapper from the Second Judicial Circuit is sitting with us this morning by designation in place of Judge Justice Myron, who's recused himself. We appreciate Judge Clapper's willingness to sit with us this morning. Thank you. Each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Sweetland, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. You can proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. Jarrett Jones shot and killed John Schumacher under circumstances that were nothing less than a premeditated killing. Nevertheless, Jones was acquitted of first-degree murder following a jury trial on the ground of self-defense. The following year, Jones petitioned for expungement of the record of the arrest on the murder charge. The trial court granted the expungement and the state now appeals. Because Jones was acquitted, he is eligible for expungement under the statute, but eligibility is just the first step in the analysis. Those who are eligible must satisfy two further conditions. First, that the expungement serves the ends of justice, and second, that expungement serves the public interest. So because expungement is subject to these conditions, it is the exception rather than the rule. And it was Jones's burden to meet these conditions with clear and convincing evidence. Expungement is not automatic under the statute. So while the statute itself does not enumerate factors for courts to consider in evaluating whether these conditions have been met, other cases from other states that apply the same or similar conditions to expungement have identified factors relevant to satisfying these conditions.
But do you think those same factors apply? I mean, this is an expungement statute in South Dakota that only applies in the event of acquittal or dismissal or something like that. A number of those states have situations where it doesn't matter if you've been acquitted or if you've been convicted, you've got a potential to get expungement. Do you think the factors look different in a statute here where you have either an acquittal or dismissal as opposed to a conviction?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, the legislature didn't pull these standards out of thin air. Other states use the same standards, such as public interest or the ends of justice.
But that's my question is, does public interest, ends of justice look different in an acquittal situation versus a conviction situation?
No, I don't think that either standard is applied less strictly just because it's applied to acquittal versus a conviction. An acquittal, the record of an acquittal and an arrest may have more utility to law enforcement, to the operations of police, or even just the general public in dealing with somebody than a record of a conviction. So, for example, somebody who, like Jones, is killed somebody. He was acquitted of it. That record still may have more utility to law enforcement than the record, the 20-year-old record of a marijuana possession, or conviction for a marijuana possession. So I think the utility element of the factors takes into account whether it's an acquittal, whether it's a conviction or not. Of course, convictions are not expungible in South Dakota, but nonetheless, the legislature decided to apply the same high standards for expungement that other states applied to convictions. Those same high standards apply to arrests in South Dakota.
So below, you made the argument that expungement in a self-defense case could never be in the public interest. Is that still your position? And if so, you know, what authority would you point to support such a categorical exclusion.
Yeah, that is not the state's position, and the state does not make categorical exclusions from expungement. First-degree murder conviction or arrest certainly can be expunged under the right circumstances. But I think it depends upon the circumstances, and where you have circumstances here where the claim of self-defense was very, very thin, as opposed to, let's say, Schumacher was himself pulling a gun and about ready to shoot. That, of course, isn't the circumstance here. But when there's a much clearer case of self-defense than what we have here, then I think the utility of the record is lower.
Because this is a case of first impression, how should the facts, the underlying conduct, be viewed? Should they be viewed in the light most favorable to the verdict or de novo by the expungement court?
Well, I don't think the verdict plays any role in how the factors are applied here. He was acquitted, therefore he's eligible, and beyond that, now you have to apply the factors. So the interest of justice factor, that tends to focus on the nature of the offense, the arrestee's character and conduct, before, during, and since the offense, or the arrested conduct. The public interest condition generally focuses on balancing law enforcement's interest in retaining the record against an arrestee's interest in being relieved of the hardships of having the record. So courts have looked at various factual circumstances when determining if those factors have been met.
So can we, and this may be similar to Justice Curran's question, so can, I mean, we didn't preside over the trial, obviously Judge Summers did and was also the judge here. Are we in the same position to assess the strength of the defense or the evidence as Judge Summers, or do we owe some degree of deference in some way in terms of how we look at that or how we assess that? Can we examine it sort of on this cold record and say, well, it was good defense, or it was a weak defense, or whatever?
Well, Judge Summer observed that Jones was not found innocent. He was found not guilty. And Judge Summers did observe that those aren't the same things. And especially when you look at this case, you have the video, of the shooting. Mr. Schumacher was lying on the floor, gut shot, holding his wound, and Mr. Jones walks over with his pistol and a laser sight, points at the guy's neck, and shoots him again and kills him. That's as thin a circumstance of self-defense as I can just about concede.
But to answer my question, though, please, I mean, how do we look at that? Can we do that? Can we look at that just that way, or do we owe some deference to the way the trial court examined it? And I know you're saying the trial court said what he said, but can we look at it ourselves?
Absolutely. You can review.
We don't really owe any deference. We can examine it, particularly as with the kind of evidence that we have here with some video evidence and things like that. But even if that weren't the case, can we examine that? Can we make an assessment almost like we would in maybe a prejudice case in a sufficiency or an error in prejudice case in any, you know, criminal trial?
Yeah, the statute doesn't.
Evidence was strong. It wasn't strong.
Doesn't whatever. Assign any deference to the trial court's conclusions here. And the real problem with this case isn't so much the trial court's misapplication of the facts to the statute, it's the trial court's misapplication of the statute itself. The court did so in two ways. First of all, it believed that there was nothing over and above acquittal that Jones needed to prove in order to obtain an expungement. The trial court felt that imposing any conditions beyond acquittal would be second-guessing the jury. But the plain terms of the statutes require that Jones meet the ends of justice and public interest standards over and above acquittal. Acquittal just gets you in the door. You still have to prove that the ends of justice and public interest are served by the expungement in order to receive one.
And if you're right about that, and if you're right about your additional arguments that there really was no evidence on public interest or the ends of justice, like none, and if you're right about all of that, state wins. And maybe this isn't the right case to go probing into other jurisdictions to really give a larger exposition on these factors, because that would solve this case.
Well, the trial court did comment that Jones's evidence on the factors the court generally consider was weak, where under the statute it has to be clear and convincing. The trial court also...
But your argument is he didn't have any, if I'm reading it correctly.
His only argument was that it makes me look bad.
So that would relate to his interests.
That would relate to his interests, not the public interest. And it's the state's position that Mr. Jones is a continuing threat to public safety. He has been arrested 3 times since his acquittal, all under circumstances of where he was intoxicated. He was oppositional, defiant with law enforcement. He has assaulted and threatened law enforcement. A couple things
on that, counsel. So you filed a supplemental brief that referred to an additional arrest, which I think is one of the things you're referring to now. That wasn't before the circuit court at the time of the expungement determination, though, correct?
No, it wasn't. But
so isn't that, you know, asking us to weigh a new fact in the mix that wasn't presented to the circuit court? And how would that be proper for a review of that particular decision?
For 2 reasons. I think the court can take judicial notice of the fact of the arrest and the record of that arrest. But most of all, Mr. Jones comes in here and he says in his brief that he is not a threat to public safety. I don't think that that argument can be made and yet ignore the fact that he was just arrested 2 months ago for public intoxication, assault on a law enforcement officer. So I just don't think we can ignore that under the circumstances.
My other question is with regard to the access to the records, because that's really, you know, obviously one of the primary public interest at stake is to whether or not the access to the records is an important factor weighing against an expungement. There seemed to be a little bit of disagreement between your interpretation and opposing counsel's interpretation of the statute that says what happens after an expungement. And I'm interested in your view on what it refers to, and I think it's 23A331 that refers to a non-public record of the disposition is then forwarded to the Division of Criminal Investigation, and then it refers to all the other records being sealed, and we've had this discussion back and forth. Well, it doesn't expunge the conduct. The state can still use the conduct. It's did in the law enforcement certification case, but it's not so clear as to what your position is what actually can be used in a later proceeding, if anything, from the existing trial record, for example, if there's a sentencing on another matter or a 404B issue has been raised. You've referred to those. What is your view on what is actually, what can be used, with an expungement?
I don't think we can use anything except the record of the fact of the expungement itself. And that's pretty much what happened in Jarman. They were able to bring in evidence that he had obtained expungements. They were able to bring the victim in to testify to the underlying conduct. But, of course, we can't bring the victim to testify to the underlying conduct in this case. The best evidence of what happened here is the video itself. And, you know, Mr. Jones, the last time he was arrested...
So is it your view that even if there's law enforcement isn't required to destroy their own records or a prosecutor's office... And one of those things, it may be a duplicate copy of the video that was admitted as a trial exhibit. Does that mean that they couldn't use their copy of the video in another case where there was a 404B motion, let's say?
No, it's sealed, and the prosecutor would be revealing sealed evidence, so even if it was the prosecutor's copy. Jarman, I think, is clear that sealed expunged records cannot be used in court proceedings except the disposition of the expungement itself. And, of course, you can bring in witnesses to testify to the underlying conduct. Expungement is an act of legislative grace. It's meant to restore the arrested person back to the status they occupied before the arrest occurred, as though the arrest never occurred. And So it's intended to give a one-time arrestee a shot at a clean slate. But as an act of grace, the legislature is entitled to impose whatever conditions on expungement that it sees fit. The trial court abused its discretion here by not applying the statute properly, by believing that Jones did not have to prove anything over and above acquittal to qualify for an expungement, by believing that the public interest standard was unworkable and therefore really not applying it at all.
So counsel, should this court adopt factors to guide a future expungement courts in making these determinations under the statute? And if so, what primary factors would the state suggest are most applicable?
Other courts use the public interest standard or variations thereof. They have looked at whether there was probable cause to arrest, actual adverse impact on the arrestee from having the record, the duration since the arrest, whether the petitioner has been offense-free, and above all, the utility, the continuing utility of the record to law enforcement and the operations of the police and the administration of justice. So we would ask that the trial court's order granting expungement be reversed in this case.
Anybody have any other questions besides before?
Well, I had one question. You wrote in your brief, counsel, that the public should be able to educate itself concerning the circumstances of the Schumacher shooting. But when you talk about the public interest, aren't you primarily referring to law enforcement and the prosecutor's office?
Both. So, for example, you're going to get police circulating in and out of Brown County. I think it's very useful then to know who they're dealing with when they're dealing with Mr. Jones. By a like token, Mr. Jones might want to do something in the community. And the community has a right to know that they're dealing with somebody who has a long record of public intoxication and killing somebody.
Well, you're only expunging this particular record, and the public is going to have access to all the media that was published on this, regardless of the expungement, correct?
Sure, but Mr. Jones had a record of public intoxication before the shooting. He's got a record of public intoxication after the shooting. So, you know, I would expect them to argue, oh, these aren't serious charges. But in the middle of these non-serious charges is a very, very serious conduct. So I don't think that the picture portrayed of Mr. Jones as of having some DUIs and public intoxication issues gives the public an adequate picture as to who they're potentially dealing with.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Sweden. You can proceed with your argument, Mr. Geyer.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. This case, I represent Mr. Jones. We're seeking affirmance of the order of expungement from the trial court. In this case, Mr. Jones was charged by indictment with first-degree murder. He proceeded to jury trial and was acquitted by a jury. During the trial, Mr. Jones presented the defense of self-defense with a firearm. The jury acquitted him. Mr. Jones proceeded to petition the court for expungement. The circuit court that heard the expungement was the same circuit court that was sitting on the jury trial. The court found in its findings of fact and conclusions of law that there was a basis to grant the expungement. It's important to note that no memorandum decision was written in this case, and there was no incorporation of in the findings of fact and conclusions of law of any oral findings at the trial court level. It's also important to note that Mr. Jones presented the court with his proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law. The state then objected to those, to what it thought was appropriate, and entered its own proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. After considering those, the court denied the state's findings and entered Mr. Jones's findings.
What All evidence?
Go ahead.
What evidence did you present at the hearing on behalf of your client to support the court's ultimate conclusion that there had been clear and convincing evidence that expungement would be in the public interest?
Thank you. So what the court found was is that there was clear and convincing evidence of the public interest because of the acquittal, the nature of the offense, meaning that first-degree murder is a heinous crime, and that he was acquitted of that. Not only was he acquitted of that, and it wasn't under some theory of, you know, circumstantial evidence, I wasn't the guy. It was, I was defending myself, my family, and my friend. At the trial, Mr. Jones's daughter testified. I mean, that's what the jury heard.
So what's the public interest, though?
Well, the public interest, Your Honor, is that when an individual, I want to step back. I take a little issue with the state's definition of public interest, as I believe it addresses law enforcement's interest and the prosecution and the attorney general, what they want to happen in this case. But the public is really the public. And so the public interest is if a member from the public is charged with a crime, especially in this case with indictment, their only avenue to clear their name of that charge is to get an acquittal, which Mr. Jones did, just as a member of the public would do. I don't think there's any better venue than to be able to clear your name with a jury of your peers. Obviously, that's a fundamental component of our society. That's the public. And so that's the interest.
You could make that argument in every single case where there's an acquittal.
You certainly could.
This statute seems to not contemplate an automatic relief of expungement simply on the basis of an acquittal.
But Judge Summers didn't stop there. He went on, he took the nature of the charge, right? Just not an acquittal of any charge, but an acquittal of first-degree murder. He took into consideration the defense asserted by Mr. Jones, self-defense, a very important, fundamental policy that this state has is self-defense. It's not only encoded in our Constitution, it's encoded in the codified law about self-defense. That's the public interest also, is that people have to be secure in their ability to defend themselves when it's justified.
But you're not saying that, you said, you know, the state's just arguing this is about law enforcement and those kinds of things. It's not your argument that public interest doesn't include those things. In other words, public safety, things like that, which may relate to does law enforcement have the ability to access these records, things like that. I mean, isn't that part of the public interest assessment as well?
It is, but I think they look at it in a vacuum. I mean, the whole argument...
But would you agree that you look at the whole package. You can't just look at one thing or the other. You got to look at the whole package, do the work, really dig into what is the public interest here, and does granting an expungement support the public interest, or does it not?
And sure. I would agree with you on that. And the circuit court took that into consideration. That argument was made at the hearing. That argument was made in the proposed findings. And the court, in its discretion, rejected that over what it thought was clear and convincing evidence of the public interest.
So the public's interest, the public's interest is a nonpartisan interest, right? They're not the prosecution, they're not your client, they're not any of that. So wouldn't it seem like in a case like this that had, you know, been so widely reported upon in the media that if somebody, again, not a partisan who really cares what the answer is, but really wants to know what happened, wouldn't the official record serve as a better source, or at least a supplemental or complementary source to what they might find in the public domain if, in fact, the public interest is to know the truth?
Well, I don't think so. In light of the facts and what the court found in this case with when you look at the public's interest in having a judiciary where they can go get exonerated, right, find an acquittal, when they have a defense that's ingrained in our Constitution and fundamental public policy of the right to bear arms, self-defense, I don't believe that that is outweighed by the public record law or that interest of the public to find that.
And obviously, that's really where there's some bleed over, because I can sure understand why your client wouldn't want that. That makes sense to me, of course. But it seems like that kind of this interest in defending oneself and all of those things, they seem more parochial. And in, you know, there's an argument here that that got transposed and carried over into these other factors that, that do seem quite different, the ends of justice, the public interest. And I'm not sure that that can do service for all three of the showings that you have to show and at a heightened standard.
Well, I respectfully disagree.
That's fine.
Because I think what we're talking about are two basic tenets of, you know, our society. And one is the right to be judged by your peers, and not by just a court. That's a fundamental part of our society, fundamental to everybody to have that secured. Also, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. That's also codified in our statutes. I mean, I think it's really important to the people of South Dakota that when somebody exercises their right, defends their family, defends themselves, are found by a jury of their peers in a competent court to be justified in that, that they aren't going to be stigmatized for the rest of their life.
And counsel, when someone shoot and kill somebody, shouldn't the court consider in making an expungement record or decision on what risk they are to the rest of the public?
And I think that that goes to not second-guessing the trial court in this case, where it's their decision, you know, beyond abuse of discretion.
So you keep referring to not second-guessing the trial court on the discretion, but there's also a piece in this case that is, it would have been unique at the time because it was one of the cases that first addressed and applied the immunity provision that the legislature passed. So we have in this case, and in your client continually referred to his claim that he thought he was falsely accused and the charge shouldn't have been brought at all. He testified to that. And here we had in the record that would now be expunged evidence that the court, and this is the court that did evaluate the evidence, viewed that and made a determination that the state had produced sufficient evidence to show that the shooting was not justifiable so that the charge was properly submitted to a jury. So, which would contradict at least that part of your client's claim. Obviously, he still believes he was falsely charged, but there was a different determination as to the charge made by the court. Is there a public interest in being able to see how that process works and how those statutes have been employed by the court and whether or not and make their, you know, assessment of how that all played out?
I mean, I think certainly there's, you know, different things at play, but that's why, and so I don't disagree with that. I wouldn't say overall, no, you know, no one should ever see that process or know how that works out or see it in application. But what we have is we're going back to who's in the best position to make the decision, who, under the statute, has the authority to make that decision. And so, I mean, you can certainly see the circuit court was not glib about this. I don't even know if the circuit court was happy about it. But the circuit court sat through the entire jury trial. The circuit court, acted on that motion that you're talking about, Justice. The circuit court then heard and weighed the evidence in this case, heard the arguments from the state, considered their proposed findings of conclusion of law, based upon that, balanced it, and found that there was clear and convincing evidence.
The court did not make that finding at the hearing. His oral ruling actually said, even though the evidence is weak, and even though the clear gist was, even though it doesn't appear that there was clear and convincing evidence, and then the court said, I don't know what someone could really show beyond an acquittal. The court then referred to the lack of case law and then entered its order.
Well, and what I would say to that is, you know, we know from the precedent of this court that oral statements made by the judge are not binding. What's binding is the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
And that's kind of where I got back to my initial question. So how then, given that underlying record, does the record support the later conclusion of law when he adopted your proposals that said there was clear and convincing evidence?
Well, when we look at what the court found in the findings, the court considered several things, nature of the offense, that's obviously before the court, the defense that was raised by the defendant, that was obviously before the court, the stigma associated with having such a crime, that was obviously before the court, the public interest the ends of justice, you know, promoting somebody that has an acquittal, specifically on a self-defense charge, raising the Second Amendment right. All these things were considered. You can see that in the findings, and all this evidence was presented at the trial court level.
Are these really findings of fact, or are they just the court weighing things that really aren't all that disputed, including policy things? And I'm not critical. I'm just saying, in terms of our review of them, are they truly findings of fact?
I believe they are. I mean, he clearly lays out what issues he considered to be significant to be the basis for supporting his conclusions of law. And I'll just go back to you. The fundamental tenets of our democracy is being tried by a jury on a criminal charge, especially one where you're facing life in prison. I think that's a very important public interest. It's obviously, the ends of justice are served by having somebody seek an acquittal when they believe that they're innocent and that they've properly asserted their Second Amendment right.
But other than the acquittal, what evidence was presented for the judge to consider on what's in the public interest?
Well, the acquittal, the nature of the offense.
That's defense, the same thing.
But that's, well, not necessarily. I mean, I think just the acquittal. I mean, if you say other than the acquittal, I mean the acquittal of that offense, yes.
Because the offense was such a serious felony?
And because of the Second Amendment right asserted, the right of self-defense.
How does the Second Amendment affect the court's decision at all on what's in the public's best interest?
I think it's in the public's best interest that if you have to defend your family and your life by exercising the Second Amendment, and you get charged by the state, and you go to trial, and you're acquitted, that the public knows that you're not going to carry the stigma with you for the rest of your life.
And again, if you're on the flip side of that, if you're an individual that's willing to use a gun to shoot and kill somebody, shouldn't the public be able to consider that in determining what the risk factor of that person is?
I think that in this case, I think that with the jury acquitting Mr. Jones, with the defense he asserted, and the facts that the court weighed, I think it is appropriate that the expungement be done in the best interest of the public. You could argue that, you know, that's a component that needs to be considered. That was argued. I think that the judge weighing that made the correct decision and found that there was evidence to.
Can we assess the evidence in this case? Can we assess whether this was a strong case or a weak case or whatever? I mean, the trial's done, of course, but in terms of granting this relief.
I don't think that's appropriate for two reasons. One, I think you're taking it out of the hands of the trial court, who actually was on the trial, but I think you're also taking it out of the hands, more importantly, of the jury. The jury is the one that weighs the evidence at trial and determines guilt or not guilty.
Yeah, well, the jury determines whether the burden's been satisfied, whether killing is justified, all that sort of stuff. Those burdens are different here. So I'm trying to figure out if we owe any deference, and I don't know that the judge really found many facts that relate directly to the evidence, at least in the written facts.
My time's expired. May I answer?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So I don't think it's appropriate to address the circuit court's findings other than the standard of abuse of discretion. I think that just like we're dealing with a suspended imposition of sentence, you know, this is an issue of granting mercy. I think the trial court's in the best position to weigh the evidence and make a determination. I think the record, devoid of actually being present, I think that the best deference is to the jury trial, to the trial court, not to second-guess them on what the verdict was. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barron. Mr. Sweetland, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There's some discussion of the Second Amendment argument, Your Honors, but Jones did not develop that argument or any authority in support of it in the trial court and frankly has not developed any argument or authority in support of that argument here in this court. Jones has cited virtually no authority for the position that expungement implicates Second Amendment rights in any way.
Well, and even if it did, I mean, I don't really understand, and maybe I have to think about it more, but any acquittal where where someone insists upon their constitutional right to go to a trial is an invocation of your right to put the government to its proof under the Fifth Amendment and require a trial under the Sixth Amendment, jury trial by your peers. All those things are implicated. So there's no shortage of really, really serious constitutional rights that are at play in every one of these criminal trials, and particularly the ones that yield acquittals.
Well, I think above all, really, it kind of makes no sense to say that somebody who defends himself with a gun is more entitled to expungement than somebody who defends themselves with a knife or a baseball bat. The Second Amendment has coexisted with permanent arrest records for centuries in this country. There's never even been a right to expungement. It's a rather recent invention. So the idea that the Second Amendment is somehow incompatible with defending yourself with a gun just kind of doesn't make sense. And that argument would need much more development than it's received from Jones for it to be any kind of a viable argument in this case.
Is that a quantum of the evidence case argument? So it's maybe he could have stigma, maybe he could have these things, but he really just didn't develop that. In other words, it's all speculative. He really didn't say, I'm going to have trouble with DSA, I'm going to have trouble getting loans, I'm going to have these things. That was all speculative. Is that a quantity, quality evidence argument that you're making?
Well, certainly he didn't present the sufficient quantity of evidence to meet the factors that other courts have identified with respect to probable cause. There was most certainly probable cause to arrest Jones and charge him with first-degree murder. The state's case was convincing. Jones presented no evidence of any actual impairments of his employment or livelihood or life beyond the stigma to himself. And bear in mind that the stigma in this case is a function of how this shooting happened.
He argued in his brief that he shouldn't have to, or any defendant shouldn't have to, show an actual harm to meet the burden. Do you disagree with that?
I strongly disagree with it. I mean, you can't meet a burden with hypotheticals. And that's what he offered the court, was hypotheticals, and the court found that that was weak. And the statute requires more than weak. It requires clear and convincing evidence. So Jones did not supply any evidence of any actual impacts on his life. He's employed in the family business, hasn't demonstrated he's ever been denied credit or denied the right to continue to keep and bear arms. Virtually no impacts other than the stigma, and the stigma in this case arises from the very, very thin nature of the self-defense claim.
So, Mr. Sweetland, I think Mr. Geyer, in his brief, talked about the suspended imposition of sentence statute and the standards being very similar. I pulled it up. It talks about ends of justice, best interest of the public and the defendant. And so same standard. And so there's, you know, what we typically do, we don't get appeals on those. Maybe a question if we have jurisdiction. But in any event, if that gets appealed up to us, It's abuse of discretion. We're probably going to affirm that, like we typically would do on a sentencing case where the court has properly applied the procedures and properly considered it. The defendant's in front of the trial court. The difference here, maybe where it breaks down, is the expungement statute has another requirement, which is the defendant has to, you know, the suspended imposition sentence doesn't place any obligation on the defendant to present evidence of any type. This statute requires clear and convincing evidence the defendant has to put on. So that seems to be a distinction. So then, you know, the legislature seems to have created an additional hurdle that the defendant has to actually come in and present some evidence. And it has to be clear and convincing, not just you know, a 50-50 or 51%, but clear and convincing, a little higher standard than preponderance of the evidence. Does that matter?
So my time is up, but with the court's permission, I'll answer. I think even in cases of suspended imposition of sentence, you're talking an exception and not the rule. You have to earn it. You have to convince the court, and the court uses its discretion to decide whether you receive it or not. It's not a matter of course. And Your Honor talked about, you know, the court looking at the factors behind a suspended imposition of sentence and properly applying those factors. And it's our position here that the court didn't properly apply the factors, that the court misread the statute and kind of didn't apply it properly. So that's certainly a distinction that we have in this case. The standards, you know, they're out there. The legislature picked the clear and picked the public interest and ends of justice standard, likely because other states have that standard and other states can be persuasive authority, not controlling, but certainly persuasive authority in how South Dakota will implement our statute. And Jones certainly did not present clear and convincing evidence, that high standard that's required. The public interest standard is a high standard. Whether it's applied to convictions or acquittals, the standard itself is high, and Jones failed to meet it. So we would ask that the trial court's order granting expungement be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case is fully submitted. We'll be in recess.